Good day, good night, and welcome to the Two Solitudes Soccer Podcast for patrons only. This show will be published as a regular show as well to make sure that you can discover what we do weekly here on the Two Solitudes Soccer Podcast. For $2 a month, you can subscribe and get access to our exclusive content covering the Canadian Premier League and Canadian soccer. And what better way to talk about Canadian soccer and the Canadian Premier League than talk about a brand new team, brand new name, and later on, the Canadian Championship. First of all, Dwayne Rollins is with myself, Kevin Laramie. Dwayne Rollins, good morning.
Good morning. That's, of course, patreon.com/sportspodcasting network for that $2 a month. You get the archives with that as well. So this isn't our first show, but it's good day. We're all six teams down, two to go. Hopefully,
find maybe out. Three. Maybe 3-2 then. Who knows? Ottawa. Well, looking at you, Ottawa.
Yeah, the Fury have to come in. That's going to be an interesting topic onto its own. I know there are some Fury fans that believe that they should stay in USL. I'm not sure they're going to have that opportunity, that choice to make. I think that they might have that choice made for them, but that's a different topic for a different day.
It's right. And the question is, will the USL make that decision, or will the Canadian Soccer Association be like, well, you know what? You had that 1 year, then it turns into two. How about you just, what's better? Being a very small fish in a overgrowing pond, or maybe being a new fish and a veteran fish in a brand new pond?
I think it's better to be in the National League. And as I've said to Fury fans that asked me this question, that sort of lean towards the USL as an option, the Canadian Premier League might be a higher quality than the USL quicker than you think. I think that the budgets are going to be higher per team, and that perhaps might be Ottawa's reluctance to make the jump right now, as they might like to keep the smaller budget. But that's, as I said, not about Hamilton. Hamilton has been launched. And Kevin, I don't know how I don't know if I've wrapped my head around this idea yet of a team from Hamilton that isn't in black and gold. What's that about?
Yeah, we were surprised by the color scheme, and it started. There's like a continuity, certain with the orange, you know, the orange of an amber, of a forge, of a foundry. That's kind of the color scheme a bit of Hamilton. And of course, this is inspired by Hamilton's long history of being a steel town, being one of the earliest steel town in Canada due to its location, geographically speaking, close to the United States market and the big port of Hamilton. Has a lot to say with this. And of course, if you are a cycling fan, if you are like me, I used to cycle along Lake Shore from Oakville to Burlington to Hamilton, got lost in the Steel District a few times on my bike. So that's where it comes from. Forge FC, Hamilton Forge FC, by owner Bob Young and Scott Mitchell, the owners of the Tiger Cats.
Yeah, look, and that's another reason why I was shocked that they're not black and gold. I suppose that they're trying to, I don't know, they're trying something new here, and I guess you got to give them some credit for that. This is my issue with the name. I said to you off air that I had a bit of a rant on this. So I don't know if it's a rant or not, but and we'll call it that. I am someone who believes that we should have a nod back to the history. We don't have a long, you know, we do have a long history of the sport in this country. We don't always, it's not a straight line. It's a very zigzag line, but we do have certain names that we associate with soccer in certain cities in this country, and Steelers is a name that we associate with soccer in Hamilton because of the Canadian Soccer League, the league that was alive in the 90s. And the fact that they didn't call themselves Steelers frustrates me a little bit, because I think that would have been a perfect fit. It frustrates me that there's not any talk of Blizzard becoming a name in this league, that 86ers isn't coming back in some capacity. I think that this would make a lot of sense to a lot of people, particularly fans that were around at that time. Now, when I talk to people in Hamilton about this, they always say the same thing. They always say, well, we don't really want to, you know, grab onto that whole steel industry thing as much as we have in the past. We want to have a new identity. Hamilton isn't Steel Town anymore. I mean, in fact, DeFasco is shrinking. DeFasco doesn't even really exist anymore in any real way in terms of a major player in that market. So they kind of want to disassociate with that. So why would you go that direction if you're not going to also tie that in with the name that's already been there? You know what I mean? I suppose you can make arguments against Steelers in the sense that, you know, there's a very famous football team, the other kind of football that's called the Steelers. Maybe they don't want to trick people that way. I don't know. But
especially if you go with the colors, too. Right? If you go with black and gold and you call yourself the Steelers, someone south of the border might raise some copyright infringement here.
Yeah, look, ultimately it just comes down to this to me. Is, I mean, if you're going to go and you're going to attach yourself to that idea, then go all the way and stick with the name that people already recognize and that has that historical tie-in. And I think that would have been brilliant. Look, MLS, when it launched, they really actively avoided going with the old NASL names. We saw about 15 years later teams starting to go back that direction because they decided at that point that they were okay with associating with that past, even though it was quote-unquote failed. And I think that there's this over-fear that they're trying too hard almost with this. And that's what that's my ultimate reaction, my initial reaction to Forge FC, is it's trying too hard. It just seems like it's trying too hard. I don't really care for it on an initial first take. Sorry, Hamiltonians, I don't. I guess it will grow on us like anything does, but to me, it sounds a little, you know, New England Revolution to me, so to speak.
At least it does represent some part of Hamilton as history, as a city, and the logo is a big anvil / sledgehammer hitting the anvil, and that amber creates the H and D logo that has an F and a C kind of as well mixed in, and that's Forge FC. Bob Young, owner of the Hamilton Tiger Cats, has been one of the founding members of this league more than just the name. We've talked about Bob Young as far as 4 years ago on this very show, Dwayne, as a potential not just owner but one of the instigators of the whole project.
No, absolutely. Bob Young's been there since day one, and you've got to respect his sort of entrepreneurial spirit when it comes to things like this. He was probably the first person of any major substance to buy in to this league. And certainly Hamilton for a long time was where we were getting most of the news from on the Canadian Premier League, the mainstream stuff. That was how we were finding out about it, because they've been pretty open about their association. In fact, I think there was a lot of people within CSA circles that were a little frustrated with Bob Young's willingness to be open about this game Premier League at a time when they wanted to keep it a little more under wraps. They were happy with, you know, our hardcore geeks knowing about it, but they weren't necessarily wanting it in the general public, which is what Hamilton was doing.
Yeah, what's the name of the local newspaper that actually, like, 2 years ago started talking about, yeah, there's a player plan
for... Spectator.
Yeah, exactly, Sentinel. So that was basically where everything was coming from. Local news, you know, still the best place to get scoops. When you go to town hall meetings, it might be tedious, it might be long, but once in a while, it's worth it.
Well, I absolutely. Dragging through the notes of city council meetings, of committees are how you found a lot of this stuff, and it's how people will continue to find out stuff about stadiums and so on and so forth, because ultimately they needed public support for that, and they had to get going in that sort of aspect of it pretty early. At any rate, it's going to be nice to see this. I'm happy to have Hamilton in the league. This will be right now, this and York 9 are the two teams that I will have, you know, pretty decent access to. I will probably purchase season tickets for both to support this endeavor. And I encourage anyone out there that lives close to a Canadian Premier League team to do the same thing. They're not going to be very expensive. Season tickets for the Forge, it looks like they said $10 will be their low-end ticket single game. So you can probably figure that you're looking at maybe $100 for the season. So by all means, it's worth $100 to you.
When we talk about stadiums as well for the entire league, we have different plans for different cities, different looks of stadium, which is great. It gives not a cookie-cutter look, right? And one thing that we're actually happy about, well, I'm not going to speak for you. I'm going to say myself. When we start talking about the Canadian Premier League, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, in a serious manner, with the involvement of certain CFL owners, we had a bit of reservation concerning stadiums. We don't want, and that's as a soccer fan here, as a Canadian soccer fan, we don't want our league to be played in American or / Canadian football stadium with just 10,000-15,000, which is a lot for our national league, but it would look empty because of the size of the stadium. Well, this might be a case here, but having the low-end ticket, having the fan base already of, like, the newsletters, the email list of the Tiger Cats, you can use that to help sell some season tickets, a la Seattle Sounders with the Seahawks at the beginning, right? Remember, when Seattle had 60,000 people very, very, very often, which is not necessarily the case at the same level now, it was due to front office being shared with the Seahawks. And for Hamilton, at least you get that as a strong start for your base of fans.
No, absolutely. Well, MLSE too. When TFC started to keep it Canadian, the example, they utilized their Raptors and Leafs connections to get the story out there too. Oh, so many years ago. No, for sure. Absolutely, this matters. And look, Hamiltonians are a proud bunch when it comes to civic pride, and I think that this will play a factor there too. They like the aspect that this isn't, you know, a lot of people associate Hamilton with essentially being a suburb of Toronto, but it does have its own identity, and having sports teams that represent that city is going to really speak to that and allow, I think that the city will get behind it pretty quickly. And it's a big soccer community out there too. There was a good showing for the event yesterday, which was held in the stadium itself. Made a big play of that. I was reading The Spectator this morning. There's three articles, I believe, on this. You know, this is your standard, this is what the name is. Sort of a columnist, Milton is his name, Bob Milton. He wrote a column saying that this is here to stay, that this isn't something that you shouldn't be afraid of folding in the near future. And there still is that sort of disbelief among the general public. I talk about this to strangers sometimes. We'll get on a conversational start about soccer, and I'll say, oh, you know, there's a league starting, and they don't know who I am. So I just get into this, and they often will come back with, yeah, well, that's been tried before, right? But it's just a completely different era now. Success of MLS, I think, has shown us success, you know, off the field in MLS in all three cities, has shown us that there's a market for it out there. The only challenge, the biggest challenge this league is going to face, is to get eyeballs away from Major League Soccer. And I don't know how they do that exactly, particularly in Toronto, Vancouver, and Montreal. And there's, I think, probably a reason why we haven't heard a Quebec team announced, and it has to do with that ominous presence of the Impact in the entire province right now. But I think that once you go to cities like Hamilton that are starved to have teams that represent themselves, then I think you really have an opportunity for success. And, you know, we've talked many times about where I think they should go in the province of Quebec.
Quebec, Laval, yeah. You have big cities here that are misrepresented in the world of sports, just like some cities that are actually named the Canadian Premier League already. So there is potential, and there's more rumbling now than a few months ago for a potential team in Quebec, but it might be too little too late for 2019, hoping maybe for 2020, but maybe it's just wishful thinking. The question I have regarding Forge FC, Dwayne, it's more about Tim Hortons field. Is the size of that field, is the aspect of big Canadian football stadium, the fact that if it's not full, the fact that it's going to be maybe more difficult to have the atmosphere that some venues will have in this Canadian Premier League. Any concerns with Tim Hortons Field?
It's a beautiful facility. I really like that stadium a lot. They are going to tarp off the upper deck. That does have the extra advantage of, let's just say, the team does get successful, like the Sounders. They can expand the seating if they want to, but having that intimacy, I think, matters in the beginning. Now, what I really like about the stadium, those who haven't been there, they have a stage area that fans can mingle on and sort of watch in a standing room, and I assume that's probably where the supporters will end up. It's on two tiers, and it has a great view of the field. Now, unfortunately, it is set up for CFL, so you're a little further back than that than I ideally like it, but I think that that's going to play, going to look quite nice in there as well. So, no, I don't necessarily with this one. Now, if it was Commonwealth Stadium we were talking about here, or the Big O or something like that, then that could, you know, even 14,000 in Commonwealth looks tiny, so because it's a 60,000-seat stadium. So
Tim Hortons Field is around 35, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I think it's a little smaller than that even, a 27, I want to say, but I don't know offhand. Hamiltonians can correct us. I'm being a bad Torontonian here by not knowing exactly how big Tim Hortons Field is, but it has an intimate feel to it. And it's in a neighborhood, too, and I really can envision the area around that stadium on game days. Hamilton is, in terms of the football team, the Tiger Cats, it really almost has a college football feel to it. If you go to a Tiger Cats games, there's barbecues on people's lawns. People are openly, you know, having a pint of, you know, on a tall boy walking around. It's all very chill. There's a bit of a tailgate to it. There's a school right around the corner that a lot of people will gather in the area there. And, you know, the police walk around, but they don't worry about what you're doing, just as long as you're doing it, you know, properly, I should say, not legally, because it's technically illegal.
Because you're not supposed to drink beer walking around in Canada. It's not something that is usually allowed, but at least it's not necessarily discouraged, at least for that aspect. And that's interesting, though, because One aspect of soccer around the world of football is sometimes a stadium isn't right smack in the middle of a neighborhood. Stamford Bridge for London, example, where Chelsea plays. They can't really expand outside of expropriating some people because people live just behind it. So it kind of brings a certain cachet, though.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, well, Stamford Bridge is sort of down into its own little enclave there, but for sure it's stuck in a very urban place. But it's nice to have that sort of neighborhood feel to it. And I think in the league's vision moving forward, they kind of want to really embrace the hyper-localness of it. I don't know if Hamilton has the market for two teams, but certainly that kind of community feel is going to be key to this. And, you know, as we said, you were talking about there, it is a nice stadium, and it's a stadium that is underutilized right now. I mean, they play, how many games, home games does the CFL team play? I think 10 or something.
Nine, because it's a 17-game season. You got one bye week, and then there's the playoffs, which like 78% of the league actually makes the playoff, and usually Hamilton is one of those, so especially this year with they're having success. So, no, of course, there's a lot of dates that you can fill the stadium with outside of the Sunday or Thursday or Friday night games.
Yeah, I guess the main issue, and we've talked about this with Steven Sandor a couple times, and what the issue was in Edmonton, it's similar that they have to have first rights to the stadium. That's what they want. And this is a weird situation because the CFL team essentially owns the soccer team, so they have equal rights, likely. Now, are they going to give the same priorities to the soccer team? I don't know, but do think that they are going to have the best interest of the soccer team in mind when they select the dates.
Okay, I'm being go back to 2 years ago. Remember the soccer night in Canada type of thing?
Mm-hmm.
So let's put it this way. CFL is going away from playing just, example, on a Sunday afternoon to not necessarily compete with the NFL late in the season. So we see a lot of games on Thursday nights, Friday nights, and Sunday nights for CFL, some on Saturdays. But you could have Hamilton play any given Thursday, Friday, and Sunday. And the one beautiful thing about a plastic pitch is, you don't need a lot of time to recover between games. You need none. So you could play a Tiger Cats game on a Friday. You wash the lines. And on Saturday night, you can have a Forge FC play at home.
Yeah, the lines are the only issue, but as we've seen, as I reluctantly say this, as we've seen at BMO Field, the line issue isn't really an issue with the technologies that they do now have. That it really is, unless you're really, really high up at BMO Field and looking really, really carefully, squinting your eyes, you can't really see much indication that there were football lines out there. So as long as they can deal with that, they can turn it around pretty quick, as you say. You talk about CFL. One of the great things that they've been successful with, that league, and they really have. I think they're kind of flatlining now in terms of their growth, but there was a period of about 10 years where they were rapidly increasing in their interest outside of the city I'm in, where it's been on the downclimb side for about 30 years now. But outside of that, it's been becoming more and more popular. And a big part of that was they started to brand themselves as a league that you could watch, and you had appointment TV on TSNs on Friday nights, Friday Night Football. And I think that this league, the Canadian Premier League, needs to think about something similar, that there'll be Soccer Day in Canada, the day that people know, the Canadian Premier League plays tonight, we turn it on, and it's just something that's going to be there. And I don't know what the TV situation is going to be. I think they do have the advantage nowadays that they can, they can be on YouTube if they need to be, right? And most of their target demos are going to be okay with something like that because it's just what they do already.
Chromecast, Roku, Apple TV, whatever the case may be, you just stream from your phone direct to your TV or just watch on your phone as well, and they're probably going to be a Canadian Premier League TV aspect too. But let's not disregard the aspect of, look, it's our national league and we have a national TV system here, and guess what, they don't have that many properties anymore. So they don't even have a hockey sometimes, so having a property that you can market, I don't know, Saturday afternoons and early nights. And the beauty of this game, too, is we're playing mostly in the summer, fall and spring, too. But the majority of the brunt of the games will be in the summer, which technically you don't have that many commitments versus hockey. So Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening could be the soccer day in Canada. And I would not be surprised. It would fit into their mandate and it would fit into how they see themselves going forward for a CBC / Radio Canada to maybe be the place on TV to watch the Canadian Premier League.
That would be ideal. I would love to see a game of the week on CBC. I'm fine with maybe the majority of the games being on a streaming service. You know, DAZN is a likelihood as well, the way that they've been gobbling up properties, and it can't be very cheap. I would imagine it would be very cheap, at least initially, for them to grab this. But I would like to see at least one over the air possibility out there for the growth reasons. Because, I mean, as much as we talk about, you know, Generation Z and millennials and how they watch TV, I hate that term Generation Z, but anyway.
It's terrible. Terrible. I agree.
Yeah, but and nonetheless, that's what they're known as in marketing circles. So, you know, grabbing those is one thing in streaming, but my dad's still going to flip his TV, right? Like, that's how even people as young as 50 still primarily pick up the remote control and flip around until they find something. So you and, do, I think, need to look at both ways.
And the cord cutter aspect, it's a well overplayed thing, right? We've seen the Sportsnets and now TSN offering their thing over the top and without much success because in Canada and even in the United States, so to a certain extent, there's maybe less and less viewership, but it's very demographically based where 35 and over or 40 and over, majority of people still have cable / television capabilities. If it's just digital antenna that is cheap now and you can watch a few channels for free digitally so you don't have the static and the snowstorms while watching TV, there's still a lot of people relying on traditional TV channels and traditional media consumption. And I think it's false to assume that all the fans will know. To a certain point, if you want to grow something, you got to cater more than just your target demographic. And even though, let's face it, they've been honest about it, men and women 18 to 35 is the targeted demographic right now for the Canadian Premier League, because looking for the future, looking ahead, looking at the potential of them having kids, watching soccer with them, this is where the money is in a way. This is where you get people with disposable income, and this is the demographic that can give you success down the road. But to get success right now, you need to cater to more than just the 18 to 35. You need to cater from the 7 to 77, and for this, you need television.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, look, still to this day, as much as we talk about the growth of the game amongst Canadian-born Canadians, I think there still is an element of needing to reach expats. And expats, wherever they're from, Italy, England, wherever, like expats from countries, Latin America increasingly is becoming a big, destination or big community and true in this country. So you really do need to look at them. And often those populations are older. At least the dads or the moms that grew up playing the game locally and understand the love of supporting a local team. I think you need to not just go after, you know, the 18 to 35, have their first job, want to drink beers and party and watch a soccer game crowd, which is, I think, we often focus on a lot when we're talking about how you fill stadiums. It's certainly the MLS market, right, a model in terms of marketing to play out that aspect of it. And that's a demographic, that's a crowd you're going to want to attract for sure. But I think you need to not, you know, they're not the only type of person there. They're not the, as much as we all think of BMO Field or Saputo Stadium as being a bunch of rowdy, crazy, you know, supporters jumping up and down.
It's a small percentage.
Yeah, it's 5% at top end is what that is. And the rest of that stadium has to get filled somehow.
And we might finish the show here, Dwayne, by having a little talk about Montreal and their recent controversy with the two supporter section, one next to each other, that has been changed this year. Maybe it's a good way to end the show when we talk about the Canadian Championship. But to finish on Forge FC, a who's who of Canadian soccer was there yesterday. Nick Bontis, vice president of the Canadian Soccer Association, was present. And a legend, not just of soccer, a legend of soccer, of course, but not just for Canada as a whole. He debuted in Hamilton as well. Now owner of a Portuguese third division team, Minnesota legend, that's where he's now is based with his academy as well. Alex Bunbury was present. You can find on our archives an interview with Alex just a few months ago. Alex always available with his time when it comes to Canadian soccer. One of famous from Mundialito. And of course, now he's the owner of Dezembro in Portugal. And there might be a partnership down the road. And that's what Alex Bunbury was mentioning yesterday. Look, I'm starting a project for kids from Guyana, of course, where is a birthplace, and for Canadian kids and American kids that don't have the chance to get to play abroad, to have maybe a home away from home in Portugal in Dezembro, and maybe a technical partnership, which means maybe a player movement and maybe an exchange of principles surrounding the beautiful game between Forge FC and Dezembro.
Yeah, and I think that that is actually a great possibility there. I would hope that the level of play in the Canadian Premier League is a bit higher than the third division in Portugal, but you know, growing pains and all that sort of stuff. I do think there's a lot of possibility, particularly with young players there. Because one of the great things about this project, the Canadian Premier League project, is how they're thinking about stuff like that, how they're thinking not just about franchises, but building clubs. And clubs have partnerships, and clubs have academies, and clubs have, you know, multiple outreaches in the community. And look, it is terrible that Canada is the largest industrialized country without a league in the world. I think we're one of the only countries in the world, period, without a league. But one of the advantages of being that, if you want to spin this really positively, is we've seen what works and what works around the world and can use those best practices. And I think for the first time in a long time, or maybe ever, we're actually listening and learning and taking advantage of that possibility to launch this league the right way. I don't think you're going to see the same growing pains of the Canadian Premier League that you saw in Major League Soccer in the 90s, where they were just sort of figuring it out. That's not a bash on MLS, a league that I do love, but it is true. I mean, they did have growing pains in the 90s. I didn't start watching MLS till about 2001. When they were kind of still in the middle of their messy period. They just contracted at that point. They learned how to do it. They showed us how to do it in many ways, and they showed us what not to do, more importantly. And I think that Paul Byrne, who's deeply involved in this league, was deeply involved with the launch of MLS in Canada, learned from that and will share that knowledge with those that are in position to make the right choices this time. So, yeah, by being last, we have some advantages, and hopefully we're going to take full advantage of them.
Hopefully we learn from other people's mistake, and that's all we can ask for. Now, when we look at a few Easter eggs that it's been, 2 weeks since we've done a Canadian Premier League show. So, Dwayne, it's funny how we see a few players that we know by name and by face popping up in videos of clubs. I don't think Milan Borjan popping up in a video a few weeks ago is a coincidence. I don't think Ian Hume saying, I'm not going back to the Indian Premier League, guys. I really enjoyed playing for you guys in the Indian Super League, but I'm not coming back. I don't think those things are all coincidences. Seeing the face of Toussaint Ricketts being in the videos of FC Edmonton, I do not believe that it's a coincidence either. Having Canadian known soccer players that are playing abroad or have been played abroad for a long time, maybe even certain player who was onside, you know, those big names might be coming home.
Yeah, they're coming home. They're coming home.
Yep.
Ian Hume's coming. That doesn't work. Anyway, no.
Hume is coming home.
There you go. And Ian Hume's from Brampton, Brantford, which is right outside Hamilton. So there you go. Yep.
That's why I was saying this, because he said this 3 days ago. So,
yeah, I'd love to see Ian Hume play in this country again. He's a player that's always answered the call for Canada. Is loved representing this country and has done well with it. And has had, you know, right. If it wasn't for that injury, he would have had a much better, longer career. I think. Well, not long. His career's been fine. Yeah. He was the MVP of the Super League twice.
He was a superstar, like a superstar over there. And let's not forget, on our darkest of night, he was the only one. He was the only one in that 8-1 with that beautiful free kick goal.
Yeah, it's the only time I haven't cheered a Canada goal. It was like a grunt. That almost made it worse at the time. Although they did cut the lead, I think, to 7-1 at that point. So, you know.
Yeah. Seven more we would have won. Seven more we were going to Rio.
I think there was a few sarcastic comments about that day. I can still remember, a former podcast partner of mine throwing his pint of beer across the wall or across the bar and hitting and shattering against the wall. That's my biggest memory of that day. I just doubted Ben there, but I think most people by now know that story. At any rate, yeah, we're getting into the dark ages here. And the idea of this league, of course, is to not have those dark moments happen again. Although, you know, anyone can have one laid on them. Ask Brazil. Ask Brazil, indeed.
Yep, ask Brazil. And, you know, another news that happened since last time we talked to each other, FC Edmonton has announced their first head coach, and it's the right man. It's the man for the job. It's the man that should have had that job. being the sole survivor, basically, of FC Edmonton 1.0 when they basically folded about a year and a half ago. He stayed with the academy, with the grassroots work, knowing that days might be brighter, knowing that after the rain, there's sunshine. And Jeff Paulus, head coach of FC Edmonton.
Although he will deny having much to do with it. Also, the person who first professional environment that Alfonso Davies was in was under Jeff. So there's been some success there as well. A good choice there. Obviously, the continuity and the tie-in to the youth market in Edmonton. And again, that points to an understanding of a need to do that. Hopefully Colin Miller might find his way back over here someday again, too. Another name that's been around for a while, obviously, FC Edmonton's coach, a guy that always had time for us on this show, and we appreciate that. Not on this show, on Soccer Today, yeah. Which, of course, will return next week. Good choice there, Kevin. I think we do, because this has, of course, been World Cup Today all this month, basically, and we are wrapping that off this weekend with the show on Saturday and on Sunday. Should we get a prediction for the final while we have time here?
Sure, Les Bleus. Why? Because there's a lot of Canadian citizens that are either directly related to France or, like me, maybe a few generations related. When I say few, it's about maybe 20. But still, it's not the amount. It's how I feel about it. And yeah, it's à la maison. Ça revient à la maison. Les cousins gagnent. Les cousins gagnent dimanche.
The score?
Doesn't matter. Who cares? Who remembers the score of a World Cup final? Do you? I don't. I just remember who lifts that 18 kilogram of... No, sorry. That 18 pounds of 18 karat gold.
You're right. I can't... It was 1-0 last one? I'm trying to remember. It went
1-0 in extra time. Mario Götze, who did not make the team this year, scored for Germany.
And it was 1-0 Spain, or was it 2-0 Spain? I think it might have been. No, it was 1-0 Spain too, I think. So, yeah, it's been a couple 1-0s. The final's usually cagey. I think, yeah, France is going to win. In fact, I think France is going to win fairly comfortably. I'm going to say, I'll give you a score. I think it's going to be 3-1. France will have a 3-0 lead at one point, and Croatia will get one back late. That's my prediction.
Well, the way Croatia's been playing, Croatia's definitely going to get behind here and going to have to battle from behind. That's their MO, apparently. In this knockout stage. To finish this special edition of the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast, first of all, hope you enjoy this Canadian soccer content. Thank you to all our patrons. $2 a month will give you access to this regular show, now back weekly starting next week. And if you're just discovering this brand new show because we posted it on the Soccer Today feed and on the ESPN network, $2 a month give you access to this topics. And because we're behind a paywall, Dwayne and I can actually maybe go deeper into our knowledge and to what we think and how we view a lot of the Canadian soccer topic. And because it gives us more time to research, more time to work and to get more news and to make our contacts work a bit harder, that's the beauty of that paywall. But that's why we keep it simple. $2 a month. $1 a solitude will give you access to the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast on patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. Canadian Championship is back in 5 days' time. Dwayne, Montreal plays Vancouver at home. Toronto travels to Ottawa on Wednesday night as well, July 18th, for the two first legs of the Canadian Championship semifinal.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting one for TFC, for sure. Montreal-Vancouver, it seems like it's an annual affair now in this thing. That's a toss-up to me in many ways. The way Montreal's been playing much better, although we'll put the result on Wednesday aside we say that. That's a good team they lost to, but nonetheless.
It's a good team, and for Rémigard to play on this pitch, I don't think he managed a game on this size of pitch since 1982 or something. Because you don't see those a lot in France and England, let's put it this way.
You don't see that. It looks like it's hockey. It looks like a hockey rink. But at any rate, we love our NYCFC, historic Yankee Stadium, built on the parking lot Babe Ruth walked on once. I still mention.
And by the way, now and more rumbling that the parking lot next door to Yankee Stadium could be where NYC Stadium actually is being built.
So actually where the Yankee Stadium was. Anyway, yeah. what was I saying? Oh, yeah, Montreal, Vancouver, I think that is a toss-up there. The Toronto-Ottawa series is fascinating to me because Ottawa has actually been playing very well in the USL over the past month or month and a half so. And Toronto, of course, well, they haven't been playing very well. And they're beat up. How much rotation do they play? We saw how badly they played when they rotated really heavily way back when they were in the CCL against that seems like so long ago now, eh? When they, you know, lost to Colorado and to Houston in that, you know, mess of a lineup they had there. So I don't think they can afford to rotate that much. And to me, you know, it's increasingly looking like that this might be all Toronto has to play for this year. And they're going to want, or do they want to be back in the CCL after they saw it happen this year? Maybe not. I don't know. But certainly it is, they're going to want to defend, I suggest. You know, they've won it twice in a row now, and that's something that I think they take some pride in, and you know, they, like their club's philosophy, say that they want to win every trophy every year. And if the Porter Shield's done, I mean, I think it might even mathematically be done. And
playoffs are like, yeah, you need to win out or at least get a 2 points per game or something average in the next 2 months.
Yeah, they got 17 games left, 34 points added on to 16. That's going to be close. You're right. That's about sixth place. So there you go. This might be it for TFC to play for this year, and it starts on Wednesday. And I think that they have to play a full lineup. I don't know. How do you gather in terms of what the Impact's philosophy is going to be towards this thing?
That's a good question. If Montreal did not have this winning streak that they did snap on Wednesday, maybe I would have think just throw the kitchen sink at the Canadian Championship and league doesn't matter anymore. Now it's quite more difficult. I think Rémi Garde, if I'm going with what I've heard since I've been covering Rémi Garde since the beginning of the season, a game is a game. And it's about the continuity of the project. It's about getting better, learning from your mistake, being able to adapt, adjust in one game, moving forward. Yes, some rotation, and there was some rotation on Wednesday for the Impact in their 3-0 defeat against NYCFC, and they're playing Saturday against San Jose. Against San Jose, if there's a victory here, it's a 3 points that you could get pretty easily. San Jose cross-country trip comes to Montreal, a place that they never really had success before. They might have difficulties getting a result, and they might be a bit like Colorado was last week, where Colorado basically came into town, came with the bus. They didn't stop at the gate. They parked the bus right on the pitch, and they were happy with it. Maybe San Jose does that on Saturday. But if I'm Rémi Garde, I do make a bit of rotation. I do reward some of the players that haven't played as much but still trains correctly but needs to still be coherent to what he's been saying. There's, I don't want to necessarily mention name, Jackson Amel, but you see players not play as much as we anticipated, and the reasoning behind it is as simple as they're not showing enough in training to Rémi Garde, and when they have an opportunity, don't seem like they want to grasp that opportunity by you know where. So if I'm Rémi Garde, I'm coherent. I do not change my discourse, and I do not change my philosophy, and I still continue to reward the players that need be and to work with that project. And if you're Montreal, if you look at your position in the standings, still six right now, who knows, you might finish six or seven down the road, six or fifth down the road in the season. This is an home and away leg. This is the first time Rémi Garde manages Montreal in a two-legged affair, so I think there's a bit of using that as a dry run for potential tactics, techniques, and way to rotate your squad for later on in the season when you have 6-point games all the time. So if I'm Rémi Garde, I do rotate a bit more heavily, but due to some injuries, not everyone is available. For sure, I'm expecting a new goalkeeper to be playing on Wednesday. I wouldn't be surprised to see Clément Diop make his first start for Montreal. That would not surprise me at all. Or maybe even a Jason Beaulieu, but maybe not. I wouldn't be surprised to see a bit more Canadian content, but not that much, because Montreal's been playing the Canadians this year, like Samuel Piet, been the player who basically played when he got subbed off against Colorado, it was the first time he did not play 90 minutes for the entirety of the season. So there is some Canadian content, but I think we'll see Rémi Garde change a bit, but not its philosophy. He might change some position to position, But the whole of the philosophy of how Montreal sets up, how they play, I think that won't change.
Yeah, well, it's not like he doesn't understand how a cup competition works, right? Like he understands.
Exactly.
So,
he
yeah.
won it before. He won it with Lyon a few times, so there's that. He won the Coupe de France, I think, in 2011.
So, yeah, it could probably be an opportunity for some players. I mean, rotation gets a bad rap sometimes. It can also be used quite strategically to light a fire under you know what, right? To get your players that haven't been getting much time to have that opportunity to show themselves that they deserve to get more time. So it'll be certainly interesting. Well, this will be the primary focus of the show will be on the Canadian Premier, or sorry, the
Premier League.
Canadian Championship, the Voyageurs Cup, on this show for the next couple of weeks. We'll have a little bit of content on the main show as well, which, again, if you're new to us, is Soccer Today, and Soccer Today is in the same format as World Cup Today. It's just on MLS and well, the whole world of soccer, but MLS is our prime focus for most of the time, and it will start back on Tuesday, I think, because Monday we'll probably want to review the final itself.
Yeah, but we're probably going to brand it Soccer Today anyways, because World Cup will be over at that point, and you know, I'm kind of glad. There's only two games left. I don't remember anything of the last month. I hope everyone in my family is doing well. Hi, I'm here. I haven't gone anywhere. Maybe my phone hasn't been open as much, but I'm here. So, yeah, we'll see for next week. But Ottawa and Toronto, let's finish quickly on this one, Dwayne. Ottawa transaction this transaction. Yeah, I made a transaction earlier this week to get Daniel Haber. One of the best strikers in the USL and another Canadian player. Now, let's finish here. As much as we're not hearing a lot of Ottawa joining the Canadian Premier League from the front office and from the coaches and the players, actions do speak louder than words. When I look at the roster of Ottawa, how can they not get ready for the Canadian Premier League?
Every single thing that they've done under Julien de Guzman seems to be with that in mind. Now, they will say that this is as much about them wanting to just be Canadian, but I think that there has to be some kind of thinking towards a long-term play in the Canadian Premier League where the requirements, they won't call it, we've talked to Paul Byrne about this directly, they're not going to have an X number of Canadians requirement, they're going to word it the opposite way, but the reality is you're going to need a lot of Canadian talent. So having them come in early, and Haber is a great pickup for them, for sure, and a player that stylistically fits well in the USL, I might add, so this is a good play for them for this year, but I do think that next year is also in mind when they bring a guy like that in, for sure.
So that's, for me, it speaks louder than what they're saying. So we're waiting on you, Ottawa, to get words if you're actually going to join the Canadian Premier League. And again, if you like this show, make sure you subscribe. $2 a month. Go to patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. $2 a month, $1 of solitude will give you access to this show on a weekly basis. And we do have the opportunity sometimes to do special shows for special moments, maybe some more shows with more shelf life and go back in the history of soccer and Canadian soccer. And this will be available on the same feed. So patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork, $2 a month goes a long way to help us produce more with better production values. And on that note, you can follow Dwayne on Twitter at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie. We'll be back shortly, and until then, have a great soccer.